Hi, everyone. Welcome to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. I'm Langdon DeMint.
And I'm Julian Taylor.
And welcome to our podcast. Welcome, everyone, to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. I'm Langdon DeMint here with my dearest British friend, Julian Taylor. How are you,
Julian? Hi, Langdon. I'm really proud to be your favorite British friend.
You are.
I do worry that I'm your only British friend, but...
That's untrue. I know there's more.
Good.
But
good
to see you, Langdon. Yep. You as well. I'm glad you're not on the golf course right now. That would make me sulking because I'm not.
I've taken a few minutes off to spend that time with you.
That's special. Yeah. It's the things like this that really keep us going, you know? It really is. I've been in Ohio the last few days. I know this will be, by the time it comes out, it won't be as relevant, but we had the Industrial Hygiene Conference, so I went there and hung out for a few days and then flew back in last night.
Did you pick up on any really useful snippets whilst you were... That was a very British phrase, wasn't it?
That was, but I like it.
Did you pick up on any snippets whilst you were in Ohio?
You know, I'm going to be honest. I mean, a few things, Some of it was, I'll be honest, some of it was still kind of the same old. And then you have the specialty focuses. You had some stories of, you know, situational that have happened to people. It was the norm. A lot of good conversation. I do feel like there were less people, maybe not, but it seemed like there were less people than there used to be, but who knows?
What were some of the key topics that they were talking about?
You know what I did hear yesterday, and it made me think of you. This is going to be one perfect segue in.
You're laughing. What's coming?
This is not bad. You'll see, and you're going to be like, "Ooh, that's good." Somebody yesterday was talking about, you know, they were doing different IH needs. You know, their sampling that they were doing in organizations, yada yada, and they brought up the hierarchy of controls.
Oh. And that's a really neat segue, isn't it?
Yeah. See?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it made me think of you and what we talked about last time. Well, time before, maybe. Sorry, it's confusing everyone. But what are the last times in the kind of the series that we're doing on the both sides of the live was thinking about using controls, kind of the what I'll say is, I think what you were calling it, the basics of safety when we think about it, how we've always done things from risk to general improvement. And honestly, when the lady was talking about that, I just kind of got to thinking. First, I was like, oh, Jules would be so happy right now. And then I got to thinking, you know, it is still that basic just checkbox that has to be done that we really downplay a lot of times the importance of. So when we think about that, and that was our last combo, now we're going to try to go on the opposite end, being a little more on the proactive and thinking of how we can do better about being more prepared. How can we look to the future and think, what can we do to ensure that our employees at our workplace is ready for the job? So what do you think? Would you like to, do you have any ideas on that before we jump in?
But again, just thinking about sort of what I've been doing recently, and I was working with our very own Mike Swain, and I think I sent you some stuff yesterday about we're doing some onboarding materials for people within our business. And it's really those basics of what is health and safety, what is EHS. And to me, one of the fundamentals is that whole risk management piece, isn't it? It's actually managing risk effectively. And so often what we see is that we talk to people, we talk to organizations, and there's a focus on incident management. And I think we've talked about this before, where actually it's almost too late, isn't it? We have an English saying of shutting the stable door after the horse has bolted. I don't know whether you have the same saying, but it seems to work.
I get it. I get it though. Yeah.
It's not one of those crazy British analogies that makes no sense whatsoever. That makes some sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the same with safety, isn't it? That if we just focus on incidents, it's too late. The key focus should be actually this focus on risk and how do we stop things happening in the first place. And I know you've got some really interesting thoughts in terms of maybe focusing on what do we focus on in terms of that risk, in terms of the seriousness of potential outcomes.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, to me, if you kind of think about it from an iteration of the culture of the world, right? You had nothing, meaning no programs, there were really no processes, the way organizations operated, let's say that way, in the early 1900s, for example. I mean, it was the quote unquote wild, wild west of, you know, of manufacturing, the Industrial Revolution. I mean, you think about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire, for example, doors were locked, they weren't allowed to leave. I mean, a lot of strenuous, hard labor that safety wasn't taken in consideration and yeah. People lost their lives. So you progress on from that. You think about a lot of the nonprofit health and safety organizations. Then you think about in the 70s, the OSHA Act and same way HSE came about. I think they both were in a year or two of each other in the early 70s as well. And so we had that governance or that compliance, and we saw great improvement, right? I mean, changes very much. Then we kind of went to that risk management time frame kind of after that, and we've seen a lot of improvements, a lot of, you know, I would say great growth. But it seems like now we're trying to figure out what is past that. And I know, you know, you've seen that slide I've used for years when I was in a previous organization, we had put that together, and you kind of think about what is the next phase. And for a while it was entitled learning culture. And I think it was, to me, it was because it's that continual learning, it's that continuous improvement. But I don't really think that is the proper, I think that is the theme throughout. I don't know what the proper title of where we are right now, but it's trying to be that proactive. You know, we talk so much about the past, it is thinking or how things were, I just nailed the microphone, or how things, oops, how things used to operate, but how can we be more proactive? And, you know, a friend of mine, we had him on the pod, Todd Hone, he had said before, and he puts a lot of research, a lot of focus on the SIF, so your serious injury fatalities. And it's a pretty normal concept we've all thought about, but he put it into a layman's simplicity that makes sense, that it's basically, you know, if I'm standing at the top of a windmill, do I care if the person on the ground has their safety glasses on or their high-vis jacket? I hope not. I mean, because you care about if you're tied off or you're making sure that you're not going to fall, you know, 500 feet. So it just makes you wonder, how often do we just look at the things that we are very aware of?
Yep.
But we don't really look to think, is this actually pertinent to keeping us truly healthy and safe, or are we just doing the activities that we know about? You know what I mean? Not downplaying all the other needs for PPE, but are we actually thinking about it, whatever, holistically to everything that job entails? And I don't know that we are sometimes.
I think I'm just sort of thinking aloud here, but just listening to you there is that sort of, what should we be focusing on in a risk assessment? And I suppose health and safety can sometimes get this reputation for sort of people being a bit wacko, can't it? Because they go into the nth degree. And actually those small things aren't going to have outcomes that we necessarily need to worry about. So I think to your point, it's actually, what are the potential outcomes and what are the potential serious outcomes that we really need to be thinking about here? And then apply what we talked about last time to, in terms of that hierarchy of controls and also the learning piece that you've referred to in terms of educating our people around it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I think, you know, and I've done many, many workshops around job hazard analysis and the creation of that and thinking differently about that. And I never blatantly, well, I did, but not a lot, blatantly just said what I was trying to. And that was a mistake on my part. And it was because a couple of times I got questioned, not in a rude way, but very heavily. And I just kind of was like, okay, we're in the middle of a workshop. This is not going to add anything. So I pushed it off. But we get so caught up, I think, in as safety professionals is looking at, when we look at a job, we think we're looking at the job, but really we're just caught up on the hazards that are associated with that.
The obvious hazards.
Exactly. You knew where I was going with that. So we don't look at the true job and think, okay, what is everything? You know, I'll say for this pre-incident investigation, but I mean it from the standpoint, what's everything that could go wrong? What are all the hazards we know about? What are maybe some of the potential adversity or the risks that we don't know about? You know, I don't know that we do that very well. I think we just create a JHA or maybe a little more in-depth risk assessment, go through it and think that we've gotten everything. And then, all right, let's share it. We've put controls on it. But to me, that's it. We need to focus more on the task and actually thinking, what does all this entail?
I think another point that you didn't mean to bring out there, but you have, is we just share it out. We just share it out. And I think, I suppose one of my bugbears is I see, and I've seen it so often in the past, is people create, the companies that, or businesses have hundreds of risk assessments, thousands in some cases. And my challenge is whoever actually reads them. Yeah. And it's maybe just the person who goes and reviews it once a year. And I'm sat here thinking, is it complacency? Is it ignorance? But how do we actually change the culture so people are thinking about that risk assessment every time they start the task? Mm-hmm. So
start when safe.
We start when safe. Pre-work checks, we've talked about those before, is actually, have you got something in place in your organization that makes people stop and think about it? And the other part of that is then, who's created the risk assessment? Actually, you as a safety professional, if I send you out on the shop floor, do you actually know what the potential hazards might be associated to that activity?
Yeah, exactly. It's the importance of incorporating the others. You know, there's certain facets that I might know, but they know the job better than anyone.
And the classic piece in there as well is that if they've helped to build the risk assessment, helped to write the risk assessment, they've got a knowledge of the risk assessment. We don't need to, we do need to confirm it and train people, but they've got a knowledge of the risk assessment. If it's not a case of just throwing it out there and then hoping people will read it or trying to get them to read it, they understand it because they've contributed to putting the thing together in the first place. Yeah. And you can help, you can start to make people become advocates for that risk assessment because they've got some skin in the game.
Yeah. Well, you know, it reminds me, and I know I've told you this, of an organization I was working with. I mean, it's been years ago, but we went in, started talking about, you know, different safety practices. JHAs I knew was something they were wanting to work on. And then we just kind of started. I said, well, let's take a look at one of your JHAs. And we did. And it was longer than I prefer personally. To still be, you know, impactful, but it was working for them. And then I was like, well, how many, you know, okay, let's take a look at a couple more. And, you know, through conversation, I found out they had over 50,000. 50,000 JHAs. And yeah. I was kind of taken back. Exactly. It was one of those, like, you know, I looked to the side, kind of, I didn't shake my head. I didn't do what I call the Zeus, which was my old Doberman. He would look at you in a conversation. I do it sometimes, just kind of cock your head a little bit.
Who else?
And that means I'm gone.
Who had a Doberman called Zeus?
Me. Didn't know that?
Didn't Magnum have a Doberman called Zeus?
Well, of course he did. That's where I based it off of. Yeah, you know.
There we go. Yeah.
Of course. He was a brilliant dog. Lucky lad. Funny. But you know, I didn't straight do the Zeus to him, kind of the, what? You know, like, you are smoking something. But it was very much a, it wasn't taken aback, because my initial thought was, you know, how? What do you have a JHA for? And we started going through, and they'd created one for every process they'd ever have, even if they didn't do it anymore. And I was like, okay, you know, repository aspect. But then, well, how do you review those? Well, you know, if there's a big job change, I mean, so the point was, I mean, there's a lot of points, but one of them, they weren't even keeping it fresh. And what they were putting into it was a very, you know, it might be detailed, but a lot of it was just the basic thinking of how we've always done it. And that's really the kind of underlying premise, is if we don't watch out, we might do things that appear very well, but we're doing things the way we've always done things and not thinking differently about how we could be better, right? Because that's what this is. It's, if you think about running a pre-incident investigation, for example, people are going to think, what are, you know, I mean, there's still there are a lot of organizations that do this, but there's a lot that, like, what do you mean? We think about the risk, but not, you know, thinking differently from what is everything that could go wrong? And what if, you know, what if Jules is doing this and this happens? You know, take it through.
Yeah. It's interesting. I had a spell where I worked in HR, and we used to do mock trials.
Why you did HR? Funny time out.
I did HR.
Did I know this?
I don't know. No, it was, I spent some time on the dark side, and then I escaped again. So, sorry, I hope I haven't offended any HR people out there. But
Darth Julian.
But one of the things we did was we did sort of mock tribunals and mock trials.
That's good.
What would happen if we get this wrong, or if the business gets it wrong, and we would take managers and put them through that experience as well, just to prepare people, but also make them try and preempt that happening by getting things right in the first place. It's interesting. I was just thinking of your 50,000 JHAs. It's kind of got me going, that. And how many pages did each JHA have?
Well, that was what got me when I found it. That's why I did the, you know, the first one I looked at was like five pages.
For our listeners who aren't watching, he's just done his Zeus impression again.
It was,
and
like
he does
five,
it very well, I might add.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been perfected.
Yeah.
But the first one was like five pages, and that's why.
Times five pages.
Well, and I asked. I said, "Well, how, you know, some of those they said could be 10, some could be one or two. I mean,
does anybody ever read them?
That's what we got down to. If it was something super, you know, relevant or pertinent, that they might. But otherwise, I mean, that is legitimately, you have one for going to the toilet. I don't mean that sarcastic, but that's a lot of, you know, it's a lot to, but that's even, and that was my problem. It was more to even, okay, you created them. Okay, great. You saw a need for it. So that's good. But if you want to keep it a living, how do you maintain that? And are you really even focusing on the full task, or are you just doing the basics you've always done? And that's really what was uncovered, was it was your, you know, your typical JHA. I'm not saying that's bad, but it wasn't thinking, you know, deeper.
And it almost makes me think of that. You talked earlier about these different phases in the history of health and safety, and that risk phase, where there was just this mad focus, wasn't there, on creating documentation. But actually, documentation for its own sake, if nobody reads it, has no value. It has absolutely no value. And you almost want to take people back a step or a few steps, don't you, and say, let's think about, why do we do a risk assessment? Why do we do it?
To me, it boils down to one thing, and that is because you want to ultimately start the job when truly healthy and safe.
And you want to keep people safe. That's why we do it, don't we? Yeah. So let's think about, we're not doing them for the sake of doing them so we can tick some kind of compliance box that's out there. We're doing them to keep people safe. So if that's the premise for doing them, what we have to do then is think about, actually, how do we do them in a way that is interesting, it's engaging, it gets people to think about them, consume them, understand them. And if you forget all of that stuff, you might as well not bother doing them in the first place. I was just thinking as we were going through, that was one of my biggest things, was how many businesses out there have got hundreds, thousands of risk assessments, but they don't get read. And then a complacency creeps in, doesn't it? That I've done this job hundreds of times before, and people just rock up and do it. And they forget to ever look at that risk assessment. Yeah.
And that's where I don't know where the perfect line is. So, you know, listeners, I'm not definitely not trying to portray that, because if you look at OSHA, you're supposed to have a lot of risk assessments, a lot of hazard analysis to, you know, ensure you're doing the job right. But, you know, for example, in the UK, you have a risk assessment for everything, and they want you to literally almost everything. So where is the right? I mean, in theory, in the States, you do, you're trying to go through, you still want to, but we don't have it broken up that you have to do a true risk assessment for, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, whereas you do in the UK. So it seems like it can become complacent in the UK because they're making you do that all the time, so it becomes a checkbox. But in the US, are we always truly considering? You know, I don't know what the perfect line is, and that's why I think it's different. You know, and that's what I try to, when I was doing the JHAs regularly, or when I still work with people, organizations, it's very dependent on you as the organization and how y'all, you know, how you operate. If obviously, if regulatory best practice or your organizational requirements tell you to do one, okay, you do it. Please don't negate that. But how are you, when you're doing it, what are we thinking about? Are you thinking about exactly what you were just, or what you just said a moment ago? The whole premise is, can I start the job when safe? You know, we do stop work, and that's great, but are we really ensuring that we're starting when safe? Because it's no. I mean, I do it. You know, I know we've talked before, when I'm cutting wood or doing a project around the house, I start when safe-ish. You know, I might have my glasses on if they're there. You know, I know I'm cutting or whatever. I'm like, oh, there's my line. I have okay, I can do this. And you know, you cut it. And that's just a simple analogy, but I start when I feel comfortably safe. That's not the same thing as truly starting when safe. And I think that's the mindset that we as people honestly need to overcome. And that's a challenge. I think that's a very difficult thing to consider.
I think, and I hadn't really even thought about it too much until we're just talking about it now, which is there's two things that we almost want to sort of make part of culture, isn't it? Which is, we've talked about before, that actually people feel comfortable to put their hands up and say, stop, I don't feel safe, this is not safe, stop. But also that whole thing of, I'm not going to start until I'm safe as well. Because I think some organizations do that, but it's by no means all organizations. It's a small percentage, I would suggest. So actually having that mentality within people on the shop floor who say, no, my process is I do those checks before I start. Yeah, I don't just rock up and hit the big red button and start the machine. So green button probably.
Yeah, red would be the
yeah.
But I do think, no, that's a good, I think that's a good point. Because if you really think about, I want to start the job when safe, let's say I might not do a full review of my JHA before I start the job. I mean, most of the time they don't. They know it, especially if it's not a change. I don't, you know, you shouldn't. But if I truly believe on starting when safe, if I do my pre-work startup, for example, which hopefully people are doing that, even if it's like five things, you know, I'm in a manufacturing, it's the same six steps. Okay, before you start, what are, just put in mind, what are the two things you know that if it fails, you could be seriously injured? Take that in consideration, ensure that those have been mitigated to acceptable levels. And then what are the other things you have to do to ensure that you can do this job so you can start it when healthy and safe? I think that's the thing to overcome. And I think organizations, you know, to me, if leadership and if frontline managers, even if they're not pushing that, it's never going to happen. I mean, crap. Again, I am an EHS professional, very blessed to been able to, you know, get schooling and then have career, whatnot. But I just gave an example of what I do. And I'm notorious for, if I'm on a ladder, you know, I'm 38, but I feel like a young buck. I might jump off the third rung. Now, I don't do it on concrete. Let's bear in mind, it's on grass. But, you know, it's just little thing. And that's simple. It's a joke. I mean, if it's a true thing, I need to be safe. I know what to do, right? But I'm just using that as an example. As people, how often do we feel comfortable enough to, I can cut this right quick. I got to push that button, or that thing's gotten stuck right behind the guard, you know? But if we truly believe in that mentality of start when safe, and we've been empowered, to think of the potential adversity or the ramifications that could happen, you're not going to do that.
But it can be so innocuous, can't it? That's the thing. The probably the most dangerous situations sometimes are the ones where we actually just don't perceive that danger. We see it as just something I do all the time. I mean, I was reading the story of when we did the World Run podcast a few weeks ago. We were in May, and one of the ambassador stories relating to that was a guy going up a stepladder in his garage to get something off a shelf and fell off the stepladder. And actually, the fall off the stepladder wasn't what caused this serious injury. It was actually he'd knocked the shelf and a pack of tiles fell off the shelf. And actually, the tiles landing on him caused catastrophic injuries. So it's sometimes they're the situations where we've got to get people to just be more conscious, haven't we? And actually think about things before they do it. And just thinking about that as an example is again, it comes back to something again we've talked about a lot, which is getting people to understand the why they're doing it rather than just telling them to do it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it comes back to us, the question asked, why do we do a risk assessment? I do a risk assessment so when Langdon is up the ladder in his backyard, he doesn't jump off the third rung.
Don't get froggy.
Because he realizes, actually, if I do that, this might affect everything moving forward. It might affect what I can do with my kids. I know your two girls are the most important things in your life. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Lindsay. Thinking that you couldn't then have the family life that you've enjoyed so far because you've had an accident. That's why we do it, isn't it? That's why we do risk assessments.
I don't know if I've ever told you this. So, and it's probably been, let's see, 14, it's probably been 11 years when one of the first times I met Todd Conklin. So my friend Todd Hone was good friends with Conklin. He brought him in. I'll never forget. We were meeting, we were talking, and he said something, and that's gotten more. I think he did it maybe a couple of years later at ASSP or sometime later at ASSP. I don't know when. But never take a laxative and a sleeping pill at the same time, no matter the order. And if you think about it, I mean, what we're talking about, what's the premise? I mean, it's the same thing. If you just think a little bit and think what could happen, I mean, it doesn't matter the order. If I take a laxative and a sleeping pill, there's a good chance I'm going to wake up a little soggy. So you think about that. And the principle is there, right? It's we have to ensure that we are enabling and empowering the workers to think differently, to make that second thought. Just because exactly what you said, I worked at an organization a few years ago, and it was a beverage distributor, and, you know, constant manual handling, you know, material lifting, things like that. And what you said was the exact scenario. You know, they had 8 hours. If you got done in 4 hours with your job, you could go home. And young dude, I mean, he was getting it. And the exact same conversation. He's like, I have some little kids. I'd like to end this shift as quick as I can. I mean, and I get that. I mean, I really do. But sometimes you just have to take that extra thought of, but am I still doing this in the way that's going to create the longevity that I need? And usually not.
We've just been, before we started recording the pod, we were talking about titles for podcasts, and I'm just thinking this one we could call Dalmatians and Laxatives, couldn't we, so far? So
that's funny.
Yeah. I suppose the other part of risk assessments is how you keep them fresh. Mm-hmm. It's how you keep it relevant, isn't it? The danger, again, if you've got 50,000 risk assessments or JHAs for all these different activities, how do you keep them fresh? And just thinking back to your point about the UK, I think we've got regulations there that are saying you have to do risk assessments. But I still think there's a flexibility in those regulations in terms of how you do the risk assessment. And I think one of the key things there is the classic keep it simple. Yeah, how do we keep it as simple as possible so that actually people will want to read it and want to understand it? And then the other thing is, how do we confirm that they have read it? Because the classic, can you sign here to say that you've read the risk assessment, doesn't prove anything, does it? So it's thinking about that side as well, like that.
No, I totally agree. And that's that's keeping it simple and still effective. I mean, that's what we have to do. You look at, you know, we use training. We use training as an example all the time, and it's pertinent. I think training plays a crucial role, but that word of training has been so, correct me where I'm wrong, please. I don't know if overplayed or watered down, whatever you want to call it. It has just been, some people, when they hear training, they're like, oh dear, here we go. Health and safety, you know, instead of if we had made it really effective, and no matter the length, but if we'd made it effective, hitting what we need to, I don't know that we would still be having the conversations that we do right now. Negative connotation, I mean, around it.
I think the thing is, again, something we've talked about before is actually shifting from a training mentality to a coaching mentality. Yep. Not saying we don't train people. We still have to train people, but it's actually that reinforcement. So even managers coaching your coaches. So coaching your supervisors and your managers. So when they're out walking the floor, actually they're just talking to people about what's in the risk assessment. What steps have you taken before you started work today? Just that coaching mentality to get people focused and reinforcing the things that we've trained people on. I look back in horror at some of the training I've done over the years, and we kind of dragged people into classrooms for 3 days and bombarded them with information and hoping that on the promise of getting a free lunch each day, they're going to actually remember that stuff. They probably take away 5% if you're lucky. Yeah. So actually the most important part is not training people. It's that coaching, it's that support, that reinforcement to help people to just make it muscle memory. That's the phrase I really like. How do we just make it muscle memory?
Well, and I think to that point, it's very much, I know we're getting close to time, but just thinking kind of that whole point of the coaching, kind of thinking differently. If you do that, if you have trained the worker on, hey, do you get what start when safe means? And that's a 5-minute conversation, really and truly. Now, yeah, I talk processes, but then if you kind of coach them, help them learn, what does that mean? Why is that impactful? That's totally different than just sitting, you know, or even when the craze of the online training, did this online. I sat behind a computer for an hour and a half and did it.
Yeah. Woo! Still don't remember it.
And then you're thinking, I sat behind a computer for an hour and a half to take a training. And that we thought that was, you know, just groundbreaking. But I 100% agree. If we think differently and try to empower and show why does this really matter and apply it, I think that's when we start seeing more proactivity and differently moving forward.
Yeah. So. I mean, even just that quick conversation, isn't it, to say, talk me through your start when safe process this morning. Yeah. Yeah, just gets people thinking about it and reinforces it. Yeah, and again, we talked about the evolution of safety and training's been exactly the same, hasn't it? From sort of classroom through to e-learning, through to now where we're starting to talk about micro-learning and point of work learning. And again, I think that's a massive step forward, particularly around reinforcing these areas around risk. And and just making people think about it, and even down to the sort of evidencing that they have read and they have understood any documents that we have created, so they start to have a value, or they start to have more value. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Totally agree.
Okay.
Well,
I think we've rambled there for a good time. We will continue the conversation on this, no doubt. Thank you, everybody, for listening. My name's Julian Taylor, one half of the Bald Guys. I'm going to let the other bald guy just wrap it up for us.
Thanks, Jules. And hopefully, everyone, you just think about what we're, I mean, our true message, our true thought is, you know, we've talked what it used to be like, talked what we're looking for now, what we hope organizations can do now, but it's very much just think differently. So, for example, as you're going about your life, as you're going about your daily activities, going to the grocery store or the shopping center to buy some new pants, remember to...
Our British listeners, he means trousers.
Trousers. Yeah. Or a jumper, sweater, whatever. Yeah. Remember to think a little differently and truly be healthy and safe, and ultimately watch each other's back out there. Thanks, everyone. Hey, everyone. Really appreciate you tuning into this episode of Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. Please follow and subscribe to wherever you stream your favorite podcast, or visit us at evotix.com.
And if you want to see how follically challenged we really are, come and check us out on YouTube. If you've got value from the podcast, please go to Apple Podcasts. And in the review section of this podcast, if you could leave us a review or a rating, that would be great.
And as always, everyone, while you're going about your days and about your normal lives, stay safe out there and watch each other's back.